Everyone, thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. It's June 2017, and you're listening to episode 41 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by a resident film reviewer, Dr. John McAteer. John is an assistant professor and chair of the Online Liberal Arts Program at Ashford University. He has a BA in film from Biola University, a MA in philosophy and religion and ethics from Talbot School of Theology, and a PhD in philosophy from the University of California at Riverside. John has written a film review about the new Wonder Woman film called The Gracious Heroism of Wonder Woman, which is available free online at our website, equip.org. John, it's good to have you on.
Always a pleasure.
Well, this Patty Jenkins-directed movie will achieve a big milestone this week, and it's going to top the worldwide box office at $600 million, and meaning that that's the first female-directed film to reach $600 million, and it stars Israeli actress Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman, and I just saw it, and I thought it was a really interesting movie, and thought it was good. So we recently were talking about Marvel heroes, and Wonder Woman is a DC hero, and we had a podcast on that, and you were discussing two approaches to heroes. Can you please remind our listeners of what those different approaches are and which approach Wonder Woman specifically takes?
Yeah, so if you think about comic books, American comic books, there's the two main brands, Marvel Comics and DC Comics. DC are a lot of those classic superheroes, the early ones like Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, the Justice League people. And then Marvel is the ones that were more popular in the 60s and afterwards. So this is the Avengers and Spider-Man and people like that. And so the way that I think about the two different comic book brands, I kind of see them as taking different approaches to what a superhero is. And the Marvel comics tend to be more realistic in the sense that the superheroes are kind of like ordinary people who get powers through some kind of accident, maybe radiation, and they become a mutant, or they're hit by lightning or something weird. You know, they become they're regular people who become superheroes. But the DC comics, and this is not universally true, but for the most part, the DC comic heroes are larger than life figures. They're aliens or something like that who have these intrinsic powers. They're not ordinary people. And so I think you end up with two different visions of what a superhero is. The Marvel approach, starting with regular people who gain powers, a superhero for them is sort of someone who is kind of has some ability and they're struggling to do the best that they can with that unusual ability. And they become role models for us in the sense that, we all have varying levels of abilities. We all can do something in the world and we all have choices to make. And Marvel heroes give you that challenge to use whatever power you have to be responsible in the world and to make the world a better place. The DC heroes, I think, have this larger-than-life image of a hero. Heroes are people to look up to challenge yourself to be better than you ever thought you could be, not just to make good choices with the power that you have, but to strive to be beyond what you have. So there are these iconic role models, these ideals, so to speak. So I think, if you think about Superman is perfect. He never does anything wrong. He never lies. He never kills anyone. He never, really struggles. He just knows what to do, and he does it. And then you compare that to Spider-Man, who's a regular kid who just trying to get through the day, and he has to pay the bills and take care of his sick aunt and go to school and get good grades and all this stuff. So I think Wonder Woman, being a DC kind of character from the DC world, she is another one of these perfect, larger-than-life role model people that we strive to be like. She's again, you know, always does the right thing. She doesn't lie or kill, you know, unnecessarily. And she's just there to be someone that we could strive to be like.
Well, I do want to tell our listeners that this discussion will be spoiler-filled. So if you haven't seen Wonder Woman and you want to, you might want to turn it off right now and then come back to it. But I agree with you. I mean, one thing that's telegraphed very early in the movie is that she is working at the Louvre in Paris, it looks like, and she receives this historical photo of herself, but she looks no different, and it seems like it's modern times now, and then there's this historical photo that she's looking at. So that's at the very beginning of the movie, and you figure out, okay, there's something about this woman. You know, a lot in the press and just in articles about this film, there's been some discussion and about her as a feminist icon. I think there were some all-female screenings of the film that were, you know, received a lot of press as being, you know, controversial or what have you. And so is this movie in particular trying to tear down biblical gender roles, specifically if you think of Christians' view of feminism or feminist icons? Would you say that this film is trying to say something about women that's not biblical?
You know, I don't think so. And I think that's part of, because this is kind of an older comic book story. You know, the Wonder Woman was created in the 40s. And so it's a different kind of feminism than we're used to in the kind of post-60s feminism. The way that I see Wonder Woman, especially in this particular film, she's definitely a feminist icon in the sense that she's a role model for young girls. Just like Superman is a role model for young boys, and like I say, this ideal that we should strive for. And Wonder Woman gives young girls this image of somebody larger than life that they can see themselves as, and they can, identify with and try to imagine themselves as this hero. But she doesn't ask girls or women to think of themselves as completely masculine. So if you think about some of the what I would think of as the more modern feminist icons or post-60s feminism is the idea that, you know, women and men are completely the same. There is no difference between women and men. It's gender is completely socially constructed or, you know, made up by culture, and there's no kind of biological or any kind of essential difference. And I think Wonder Woman does not do that. But if you compare a lot of modern action heroes, even when they try to have a woman as the center of the action action movie, the woman typically becomes a hero by becoming masculine. So she becomes very aggressive, very kind of what we think of as testosterone filled. You know, she beats up men and doesn't have emotions and does all this stuff that basically looks exactly like a male action hero, but there's no gender difference. I don't see Wonder Woman as being like that. Wonder Woman is still very feminine in the best sense of that word, while being strong and heroic. And I think that's something that, you know, it affirms that kind of gender difference that biblical images of gender would have, that there is a difference between men and women. Wonder Woman would not, it would probably challenge this, a kind of strict complementarian view in the sense that, you know, there are certain roles that women should not play. If you think that women should never be, a leader and or go into battle and those kind of things, then maybe it would challenge that. But I think in terms of a more biblical-based egalitarianism, not a radical egalitarianism, but a kind of moderate biblical egalitarianism. I think Wonder Woman would fit in with that. And so we see her in the movie, for example, you know, she still has a kind of fashion sense and cares about clothes. She likes to eat ice cream. She's charmed and excited about babies and things that you would think of as kind of a feminine take, which you could not imagine, you know, Rambo or somebody like that, you know, strictly masculine superhero caring about, you know, babies in the way that Wonder Woman does. So that's an example of how the movie says it's okay to be a woman. Women are good. You can be a hero and still be feminine. So I think that's actually a good role model for women, for young girls.
Yeah, I do think she came across as having a nurturing side to her. You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is John McAteer. John has written a film review about Wonder Woman called The Gracious Heroism of Wonder Woman, which is available free online at our website, equip.org. To read more cultural apologetics articles, including upcoming features on hip-hop covering Chance the Rapper and Kendrick Lamar and the films of the Coen brothers, please subscribe to the Journal. For this month in June 2017, we're having a special subscription rate of $30, and normally a 6-issue subscription is $39.50, so you'll want to take advantage of this by going to subscribe online at our website at equip.org. You were mentioning that Wonder Woman was created back in the 1940s, and I was just having a conversation with one of my coworkers about the film and asked him, you know, this movie takes place in World War I. Is that same true of the comics? Because I know he reads a lot of comics. And he said, no, that the original comic books are set in World War II. So do you find that change to be significant, the war setting?
I think so. I don't know for sure what the filmmakers were thinking when they changed the setting. But I know for me, you know, some of the themes that came out from that change were interesting. So if you think about the difference between, you know, World War I and World War II, you know, World War II seems a lot more kind of black and white in terms of like, you know, we all know that Nazis are evil and the Allies were good. And it's this sort of good versus evil kind of theme, whereas World War I was a lot more kind of messy and the causes of the war were more political and it wasn't just, you know, evil, you know, Nazis that we have to destroy. And so it gives this kind of complexity to the story that I think the movie is after in terms of human nature and why war happens. And it's not just pure, you know, human beings are purely evil or purely good, but there's the kind of complexity there. And then also the movie is largely about the nature of war and the origin of war. And we have, you know, the main villain in the movie is Ares, the Greek god of war. And so World War I brings up those themes as well about, you know, this is supposedly World War I was called the war to end all wars. And so that's what Diana, the Wonder Woman character, says, you know, she wants to try to kill Ares so that there won't be any more war after that. And so it's an exploration of whether that's a realistic goal, whether you really could get rid of war in human nature. So I think by changing the movie from this kind of obvious good versus evil battle in World War II to this more ambiguous, complex war in World War I that's actually about the attempt to end war and this kind of progressive ideal, I think that's interesting and maybe intentional as well.
Do you feel like the movie said anything or hinted anything specific about human nature? Like, you know, you're just talking about, you know, the nature of war itself, but it seemed to me that it was making some statements about human nature.
Yeah, so there's definitely what's one of the main themes, you know, is where does war come from? And in the movie, you know, there's this hint that, you know, Ares, the god of war, thinks human beings are basically evil and need to be, you know, destroyed from the face of the earth. And Diana, at least at the beginning of the film, seems to think, you know, human beings are basically good. And if we could just get rid of Ares, then there wouldn't be any war anymore. And so the movie initially is this kind of conflict between those two viewpoints, but it ends up being a little more complex and affirming that human beings have a kind of mixture of both, you know, good and evil in them.
You know, I've read some reviews of the film by Christians. So some Christian movie reviewers have interpreted Wonder Woman as a Christ figure. And I was wondering if you agree with that, especially because, you know, she's this special being and you find out during her big battle scene that she's actually a god. So she's the person who can kill the god of war, Ares. And so would you agree that she's like a type of Christ?
I do think there's some parallels there. I think, and they're intentional as far as I can tell from the filmmakers. This seems to be something that the DC movies, anyway, are very much interested in. So if you go back and look at the movie Man of Steel from 2013, which is the most recent kind of version of Superman, that movie is very strong in portraying Superman as a Christ figure. He's very, all these parallels with Jesus. And I think the journal had an article on that. So I encourage your viewers to go, or listeners to go look up that article, because there's definitely a lot of parallels with between Man of Steel and Jesus. And I think Wonder Woman does the same sort of thing. In fact, maybe does it a little better. I mean, it's definitely a better film overall than Man of Steel. It has, even at the climax, I think you can see Diana putting her arms out so that she looks like she's on a cross. And so it gives this strong Jesus image. But more important than just kind of these visual and story-based parallels, you know, the fact that she's born of from God and she's, you know, this divine figure, you know, I think more important than that is the message of grace, which I'm not sure you get in Man of Steel or other DC films. So the movie Wonder Woman has this lots of talk about what people deserve, right? So Wonder Woman's friend, her kind of male companion, Steve Trevor and his compatriots, you know, they have this line where they say, may we get what we want, may we get what we need, but may we never get what we deserve. And I think the assumption there is that they know they don't deserve what they need and what they want, that they themselves are flawed people who don't deserve to be saved. And there's this talk at the beginning of the film where Diana's mother, the queen of the Amazons, tells her, you know, always remember that the human beings that you're going to save don't deserve you. You know, you're beyond what they deserve. So again, this idea of the hero that comes from the outside, who's more than what humanity deserves. So that seems to be this image of a hero that brings grace to the world. And I think you know, apologists could work with that image of the gracious hero. And this actually comes at the climax of the film. It's a little bit clumsy, I think, but when Diana is going to rescue humanity, basically, she says it's not about deserve, it's about what you believe, and I believe in love. Right? This idea of belief is sometimes a little bit mushy when it comes to Hollywood films, but I think here what she's getting at is, you know, human beings, again, have both good and bad in them in the movie. And if we focus on what's bad about them, yeah, of course, they don't deserve grace. But if we believe that they are made in the image of God, that they do have something lovable about them, they are good, and that Diana can give her life for them, you know, sacrifice herself to become to kind of inspire them to become better than what they are. And so I think that's what she means by it's about what you believe. If you believe or focus on the darkness or the light. We have to accept that human beings have both, that she's gonna focus on the light and give them the love that they don't necessarily deserve as fallen human beings, but of which can inspire them to be better than they are.
Well, I definitely think that this is a movie that Christians could view, except for I would say I agree with the rating of PG-13. It's definitely for probably older teenagers. There's just a lot of disturbing war images and violence and that kind of thing. Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for John. So, John, what's your favorite summer food to grill and eat?
Probably just hamburgers, classic.
And would you rather do your taxes or go to jury duty?
Oh, no, probably taxes.
And what's a summer movie that you're most looking forward to seeing?
Good question. I don't know. It was probably Wonder Woman, and then I saw that one, so maybe I'm okay now.
I'm trying to think if I want to, speaking of war movies, I'm trying to think if I want to see Dunkirk, but I really like Christopher Nolan, so I might. But I'm hoping, and I'm not sure if it will be any good, but I'm hoping that Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets is good, not just just CGI overkill, but something good. So
yeah,
we'll see about that.
I'm not necessarily hopeful. You know, a lot of those CGI movies don't turn out very well, so maybe it will be good. Dunkirk, I'm sure, will be great. That one I'm going to see for sure.
And what's an underrated film that we should all watch?
I really loved, so recently, a few years ago, actually, now, there was a remake of the old cartoon called Speed Racer, which is probably my favorite movie that nobody liked. So go back and watch Speed Racer again, and maybe you'll like that one.
I don't remember that. Well, thanks, John, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Today's guest, John McAteer, has written a film review about the new Wonder Woman movie called The Gracious Heroism of Wonder Woman, which is available free online at our website, equip.org. To read more cultural apologetics articles, including upcoming features on the films of the Coen brothers, please subscribe to the journal. And for the month of June 2017, we're having a special subscription rate of $30. Normally, a six-issue subscription is $39.50, and to take advantage of this great deal, please subscribe on equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter, and follow the Bible Answer Man on Instagram. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes and rate our podcast, and please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes to subscribe to Hank's new podcast called Hank Unplugged. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.